Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as soldiers rejoice when dividing the plunder. For in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this.
I'm sure there won't be many people that will argue that there's an awful lot of darkness in our world. Not just because we're about at the shortest day and we only have, what, about 9 hours of sunlight on those days, those rare days in Binghamton when the sun actually does shine. Because Binghamton is still known as one of the cloudiest cities in the United States. But that's not the darkness that I'm talking about. Part of it is, I think, as I drive around the community, it seems like there are less Christmas lights on homes and on display this year than other years. Maybe it's because the economy is pretty depressed in a lot of ways, or because the electricity prices have gotten so high, people are getting afraid of that. But even more troubling than that is the inner darkness that is so real, a deep, all-engulfing fear that impacts way too many people. A fear when people see that there is or feel that there is no hope for themselves and no hope for their children. I've seen some studies that have talked about the ripple going around the world of people who are saying, we are choosing not to have any children because our world is so discouraging. We don't want to bring any more people into this world. Besides, the world isn't going to be able to sustain all the people who are here already. And with all the global warming, we'll soon have lakefront or beach oceanfront property here in Binghamton. And I'm just not going to do anything that's going to bring another person into this world. It's all hopeless. We're all going down the tubes. That's darkness. There's the darkness of some of the depressions that come to people. And I'm not talking about the depressions that are primarily a chemical one, and there certainly is that. But I'm talking about the depression that comes sometimes because of a hopeless worldview that people have. And they look at the world and they say, there's no hope for anything, and might as well just be depressed. Based maybe on their own bad experiences, maybe of what they have done already, and they're thinking there's no way out of this, or what other people have done to them. There's a darkness. And the question is, in that kind of a dark world, is there any light? In the day of Isaiah the prophet, there was also a lot of darkness. In chapter 9, in the passage that Shirley read this morning, it talks about there will be no more gloom, no more darkness for those who were in distress. The people walking in darkness have seen light. There was darkness then, but there was also light. A light that shone in that darkness, shone through the darkness. But it comes from a very unexpected source. A child. We didn't read Isaiah chapter 7. I had thought about having Shirley read that. I was trying to be nice to her today. There's lots of names and funny names in there. But really, Isaiah chapter 7 provides the background to Isaiah 9, where it talks about darkness. It tells us about Israel's darkness and a surprising light. It's the day of King Ahaz, as Paul was reading about it in our narrative a little bit ago. Ahaz was one of Israel's or Judah's wicked kings. Many of his ancestors had been godly people, but Ahaz does not live up to that. Ahaz brings in more worshiping of the Baal gods. He encourages other people and does it himself to present their children as sacrifices. Horrible thought, but he does it. And unlike some of his ancestors, he just goes his own way and does his own thing. And maybe because of that, it becomes a very troubling time in the history of the nation of Judah. The nations up to the north, Syria, where it still is today, Damascus as its capital, gets into an alliance with the northern 10 tribes, known as the Kingdom of Israel, known as centered in Samaria. And those two armies come together against Jerusalem, against the Kingdom of Judah. And there are several different battles going on, and every time Judah loses, and a lot of people end up being taken captive. Possibly even King Ahaz has been taken as a captive at one time. Jerusalem, the city, hasn't been captured, but the anticipation is that's the next battle that's going to come. Surprisingly, you can read all about this in 2 Chronicles chapter 28, many of those people who had been taken captive had been set free. Maybe King Ahaz was one of those. So he's back there, but the problem is the alliance is still very real. Syria and Samaria are still talking. And it just seems to be a matter of time when the next invasion is going to come. And Jerusalem will be the target. And it'll probably be surrounded, and it might be defeated, and it might be destroyed. Who knows what's going on? And Ahaz and the people are filled with fear. Read in Isaiah 7, verse 2, the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. And look outside and you just see, they're like that. The wind is blowing and their hearts felt the same way. Now, you know, we know about being afraid of the dark. Many children are afraid of the dark, many adults are, as far as that goes. But we're talking here not about fear of the dark, but the darkness of fear that impacts people in Ahaz's day, and it impacts an awful lot of people today. We get afraid and our life becomes like a gloom, a pall over us. Maybe you've had the experience. Imagine it. Imagine what's going to happen if you get the word one of these days that IBM and Lockheed Martin decided to merge. Well, not to become a stronger force in our community, but to be able to move everything out to Mexico, or if because of government regulations, they have to keep maybe El Paso so they can be right on the border. And there's nothing going to be left in this community of either of those companies. And for a lot of people, it would be fearful darkness. Or as some of us have known about, you have this pain in your shoulder. And eventually you go to the doctor and you think it's bursitis and you find out it's lung cancer and it may have spread. A dark day. Fearful. It's in that kind of a darkness that Isaiah the prophet shows up at King Ahaz's doorstep and comes with the typical word from the Lord, fear not. Say to the king, be careful, keep calm, don't be afraid. Talk about it the three times. All right, cool it, king. Get yourself together, quit the shaking. Don't be afraid. In fact, he gives him some reasons. He almost has a sneering tone in his voice. He says, you know, don't lose heart because of those two smoldering stubs of firewood. The king of Syria, the king of Samaria, they're just like fire that's about to go out, just smoking a little bit. That's all there is. You don't have to be worried about them. He doesn't hardly give them a name. One is the king of, he talks about Rezin, the king of Syria, but the other one he just says, well, you know, Remaliah's son. He doesn't even have a name. He's so unimportant. In fact, he goes on and says, within 65 years, Ephraim too will be too shattered to be a people. They're going to be on the garbage heap of history. These nations that you're so afraid of, their history, their days are numbered. Why worry? Don't be afraid. Have faith. If you don't stand firm in your faith, You will not stand at all. Now remember, this isn't just Isaiah coming into the king and saying, I got a thought. Hey, come on, buck up. He's saying, this is a message from God. Who is this God? This is the God of the Exodus, who, when the people seemed to be in hopeless slavery in Egypt, brought them out right through the water and did all those miraculous things. Same God. This is the God of who stood there with little boy David when big giant Goliath was threatening him. This is the God who has said, I will be your God to you and your people after you. I make a covenant with you, and I have kept that covenant. Have faith. Have faith. And remember, this is also the God of Gideon. In chapter 9, we read about, it will be as in the days of Midian's defeat. That was the time when Gideon was around. And Gideon, you know, was told, you're going to be the leader of the people. You're going to defeat this big invading army that's taken over. You're going to do it with 300 people. And he does. And remember what Gideon does. He asks for a sign. He says, boy, I can't see how this could possibly work. And so he asks for a sign, and God gives him a sign. One time it's the dew is just on a piece of sheepskin that's laid out on the ground, and everything else is dry. He says, well, let's try this again. Next time, over the ground is wet and the sheepskin is dry. He asks for a sign and God gives him a sign. And so now the prophet comes and says to the king, he says, okay, now ask God for a sign. It happened, it was done in Gideon's day, do it now. And Ahaz says, oh no, not me. I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. And he sounds very pious in all of this. But you know, it's not really piety. Nothing but unbelief. Because Ahaz has already made up his own idea, his own mind. He has his own plans. He has already sent envoys out to another country, Assyria, across the desert there a ways. They were the up-and-coming new country. And he sends them a bunch of the gold and all those beautiful things out of the temple. He takes it and sends it over to Assyria. Says, come and help us. Let's be allies. And he takes some more of the gold from the temple and melts it down and sends it off to them. Doesn't work very well. Turns out all wrong. But he's not ready to listen to Isaiah, the prophet of Jehovah. In fact, we read that he has started to worshiping the gods of the Syrians. Your God hasn't done much for you lately. You know, the last couple battles the Syrians have won. Maybe I better start worshiping their gods. What has Yahweh done for me in the last year or two? Pitch them out, find somebody else, some other god. Now, typical of unbelief. How typical it is for the resistance of some people in the scientific community today who say, I will not even consider the possibility of an intelligent design argument because I have my mind made up. There cannot be a God. There will not be a God. And I'm just not going to listen to any arguments that may come that might challenge my faith, my belief. Kind of like an Ahaz. And there are many religious leaders, too, who are quick to say, all these miracle stories, forget it. Myth. Nice stories. They make a good point. But they didn't really happen the way it says. This virgin birth thing, you know, we know that doesn't happen. And resurrection and water turned to wine and all of those interesting stories, and they teach a point. We've got our mind made up. Can't be, so won't be. But God says, you're going to get a sign anyway. You don't want one? As Isaiah says, God's getting a little ticked at you. He says, is it enough to try the patience of human beings? Are you going to try the patience of my God also? Well, listen, the Lord himself will give you a sign. And it's going to be an unusual one. You think dry sheepskins on wet ground is a pretty powerful sign? Well, this is about a virgin. Everybody knows her. She knows she's a virgin. She's going to have a baby. And she's going to name the baby Emmanuel, which means God is with us. Remember, that's what I told you. Don't be afraid. God is with us. Well, there's going to be a sign. Now, we don't read what happened. Never tells us. I'm assuming that there was a young virgin who had a baby and who gave the baby the name Emmanuel. But what we do know, and we don't know whether this did anything to calm Ahaz's fears or whether it increased it. Sometimes, you know, we get more scared. You see that in some of the rantings and some of the writings today of people who are atheists and who are getting really worried about all this resurgence of Christianity and of faith and spirituality, and they've got to write and they're going to find something to say because they don't want to think about the possibility they might be wrong. The darkness of fear. And it's in that kind of setting that Isaiah comes and says, but the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. Move on with me about 735 years. It's again a dark world. This time the darkness comes again from an occupying army. This time it's Rome. The people are being taxed within an inch of their life, and they get jerked around by a great Caesar out there in Rome somewhere who says, oh, you got to go travel to another town. Who cares? It's inconvenient. Do it and pay your money. In addition, they're burdened with the legalism of their religious system that has law after law after detail after detail. It's a world in which if you're a shepherd, you're despised, you can't testify in court, nobody listens to you. And it's the kind of world where a pregnant girl can only find space in a barn. But in that kind of a world, a light has dawned. And in the darkest world, is when the light is most needed and most appreciated. If you've ever driven through the night, and it's been a rough and a long night, and the moon has already set, and it's been that darkest time, and finally, all of a sudden, you see the first rays of the sun coming up in the east, and they mean so much to you. There's hope. We're going to get through the night. We're going to get on to the day. I think of that family, that father and children that were lost in the woods in Northern California for, 4 days? And when they finally heard the sound of that helicopter, I'm sure that first poop, poop was a sign of hope. There's going to be rescue. It's possible. Well, the people had about given up on a Messiah ever coming. We read about Anna and we read about Simeon, and they'd been spending year after year after year in the temple waiting someday. And now God acts. And that's what God does, doesn't he? Does it today. You get the flooding rain, and it rains, and it rains, and it rains, but finally at the end, that's when you see the rainbow. You wonder if anybody cares about you. You're struggling, you're down, and just about the time when you feel like nobody cares at all, you get a card from somebody that says, I'm praying for you, or somebody stocks and knocks on your door. During Advent, we've been reminded about hope and about peace, and about joy, and today about love. And in every one of those, point us to a God who is here. When we come to the end of our own efforts, they point us to an Emmanuel, God with us. Even in the days when it seems like we've been abandoned, or when we think we're certainly not worthy, we've messed it up, we've dug such a deep hole, how could God possibly come to us? And that's what Advent is about. God does come when we feel that we're at the lowest. There is good news, but what a surprise. For the light that shines is a baby. For to us a child is born. The virgin will conceive and bear a son, a baby. We would expect that when we're at our deepest and at our most hopeless, that God will come with some great big flash, like a nuclear bomb that explodes and you can see the bright light for hundreds of miles away. You expect a big shining beam like at an airport, shining from the control tower that penetrates all the darkness. But what do we get? A baby. The Israelites need hope. Who will come to chase the Romans out? What's the hope? A baby? They needed peace. And is it going to be brought at the end of a bunch of spears? No. A baby is born. And what about joy? Is joy really found today when problems are finally all solved? When you get the clear scan on the CAT scan, or when you win the lottery, Is that what brings joy? No, it's a baby. And love. Is love mainly what happens when you finally meet that girl who just, turns you on, and you got fireworks flashing all over the place, and your eyes just beam? Or when you get a new gold bracelet or a diamond ring? But love really comes with a baby. A baby is born. That first little beam that is seen, that sign of hope when you're at the lowest. It's the time when the gospel starts to break through with a message that there is a heaven, that this life isn't all there is. There's an eternity. And it comes in the incredible birth of a baby to a virgin, an Emmanuel, God taking up residence with us. That's what John says. The word God becomes flesh and takes up residence among us, lives with us. And we saw the glory. See the light. Rejoice. Receive the love of God.